Station number 14129, Sydney East.
3-3. So you were at Herne in this cafe, you said?
No,
At
in
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth, in Bournemouth,
Yes.
for a short period of time, when I did a trip on a walrus, I see. I was taken for a flight in a walrus. I'd never been in one before, which is quite interesting, from Poole Harbour.
At what stage did you actually go out to the Middle East?
Well, now, in... I'll just come to that now. February, about February or March, we did another big mass landing of Horsa gliders for the King and Queen this time. This was with Horsa gliders. And we all went on leave after that. Came back again, did a bit more flying. We were then sent on embarkation leave. We came back. We were still at Bulford. We stayed there about a fortnight. There was no flying. We were sent on embarkation leave again. And this time when we came back, we really did go. We got on the train. We were inoculated. We had a huge armful of whatever it was. Everything you can think about, I think. We had an idea we were obviously going tropical because it was. What did they tell us we were getting? Dysentery? No. No, sorry, that's what we got. Yellow fever and that sort of thing. We were all inoculated against that, so it's quite obvious we were going somewhere where it's going to be hot. And then we went on the train up to Greenock, up in Glatnir. You know where Greenock is? Or Greenock, as they call it. And we went on the New Holland, NIEU, Dutch ship, Holland, and troop ship. And believe it or not, we were all shoved down in the holds and had to swing hammocks. And none of the others knew anything about that except me, having been at sea for a few years. I knew exactly what the position was. So we had to sling our hammocks over the mess tables. And that was about, we were 10 days on that trip down to Oran. During the trip, unfortunately, the troop ships were made dry. That was due to Montgomery. So it wasn't an all that pleasant trip in that sense of the word. However, we used to do, I don't know, we used to play all sorts of games, and there was an American colonel on that ship who had. He had two pearl-handled revolvers, I can remember that. Don't think it was Patton, but some American colonel, and he was showing us how to fire this, which was a bit of a film star touch, I thought. However, it was amusing and entertaining. And we did a bit of unarmed combat. It used to sort of run round the deck, because it got very hot below decks as we got further south.
Did you run into the enemy on the way?
No, well. No, it was an uneventful trip until we got to Oran. The day before we got to Oran, we were told to take all our. We were all sergeants, by the way, then. And we'd been issued with our berets, maroon berets. Well, that was long. We were issued with our maroon berets in 1942. That's the thing I should have mentioned. When we were issued with those berets, June or July, 42, and then the paratroops had them after us. We were then Army Air Corps. And we were the beginners of the Army Air Corps, then the paratroops joined us, then the SAS and the AeroP. All part of the Army Air Corps then. That was 42. Right, coming back to our trip on the boat. When, the day before we got in, we were told to take all our badges of rank and our brevets off, because we were landing at Oran, where the French were very, as the Americans say, anti-British. So we had to be all. And we had to put the American fore and after on. We had to come ashore as American troops. And we were driven in these American trucks. A mad drive it was by. There were coloured gentlemen driving them too. Mad drivers. And they drove us up to this camp called Tizzy Camp, which had been built for prisoners. And that's where we were all dumped.
How do you spell Tizzy?
Tizi. And that's where we were all dumped.
Did you come across anti-British feeling on the part of the Americans?
No, we were straight off the. No, not about the Americans, no, the French. It was the French that were sort of. Because Oran, we'd knocked Dell out of the Navy. Admiral Darlan, I think. Then we were only there 2 days and nobody liked it. It was an awful place. Then our colonel, George Chatterton said, well, I want 8 chaps for an advance party. No, 14 chaps for an advance party. So, you know, volunteers. Well, I volunteered. In fact, 14 of us volunteered very quickly to get the hell out of it. And we were taken to a place called Mascara, where we were put in this middle of this sort of orchards. And as we were the advance party, I can see George Chatterton, and I said, right, I've got space in here. You've got to dig latrines. These were all sergeants. So we said, oh. And he said, I'll come and see you in a couple of hours. Well, what are we going to... Oh, we'll be bringing some stuff up for you, like hammocks and things, to sling in the trees, in the orchard, in the olive trees, the olive groves. So we started to dig latrines. That was
it. Mascara, did you say?
Mascara, yes. You know, the stuff you paint on, but it's that, yes. That name. We started to... was it Masakan? Mascara, I think it was. Yeah, I thought... Or was it Masakan? No, Masakan. Sorry. Masakan. We started to dug these things. Then about an hour, he did come back. And we said, well, where the bloody hell are we? He said, well, it's about 3 miles down to a place called Masakan. 3 or 4 miles. Bloody hell, that's a long walk. And it was very hot then. In the middle of... This was on the edge of the Sahara, you see. So, we weren't very happy, but he brought all our supplies and food and everything. And he said, I'll try and come and give you a break the day after tomorrow. He said, you've got enough food and supplies here, and cans of water and everything. And he said, I've got some whiskey and beer. We were all right for that, and cigarettes, of course. We had plenty of food and everything, and hammocks, and mosquito nets, because you had to put the mosquito net over your hammock. And then he disappeared. And we were there, I should say, yes, we were there 36 hours. We dug these damn things, something to do, I suppose. We decided we'd dig them at night until the mosquitoes started to come, and then we changed our minds. So we used to dig them in the morning. We finished those, and he did come, not the following day, but the day after. By which time, we'd said, well, we'd had enough of this lark. Why don't they get some Arabs to do it? And he did come in the morning, mid-morning. He came with 3 other jeeps. And he said, right, we've got these jeeps here. I'm going to take these chaps back, and we've got a jeep for you, so you can go down to Masakan for a break. And one of them said, I've got it. By the way, he said, why can't we get the Arabs to dig these holes? And I remember George said, well, the reason is that nobody knows we're here yet. That's why we can't get the Arabs, so we don't know how to treat them. Well, we said, we can always threaten them, can't we? He said, that wouldn't do. We'd have a... He said, no, leave it with me. I'll sort something out. Well, it took him a week to sort it out. But we had got jeeps, so we went into Masakan. And that was great. This had a big town square, Masakan. I can remember it. Great big square. At midday, we used to go down there. It was very, very hot at midday. Go in this square, and there was a restaurant along the side with covers, you know, lovely overhanging covers. Very colonial, French colonial. And we'd order bottles of vino. Incidentally, we only had occupation money then. And there used to be a little Arab boy. In the middle of the day, I think he was obviously mental. He'd run round the square making the noise of a jeep and the squealing of brakes. And he'd go there for hours, imitating a jeep, this little Arab. He was obviously out of his mind, but he didn't do anybody any harm, except he made this noise all the time. A little thing sticks in your mind like that. But it was a nice place.
So this is in Algeria, round about, say, April... Time?
April, May, yes. April, yes, right. Because we'd left... We left in April, didn't I? Didn't we? Yes. Then he came round. They said the rest of the squadron were coming. That's right.
What squadron was this?
2 Squadron, which was the one we went out with.
2 Squadron glider pilots?
Glider pilots, yes. And they all came out then, all slinging under the trees, under the orchards. That was quite amusing at times. And then we had... Ah, yes, that was it. Somebody said, but where the hell are the gliders? He'd been out there acting as soldier, no gliders. And George came round one day, George Chatterton, and we were all sort of wondering what the hell was going on. And we said, well, what's happened to the gliders? He said, bloody good question, I'm trying to find out where they are myself. Weren't any gliders, you see. Anyhow, eventually he came back one day and said, right, we're moving to, was the name of the place? La Signia, big aerodrome. He said, I found the gliders. So we went to La Signia, and there were all crates all over the place, huge crates. And we said, where are the gliders? He said, they're in those crates. But they, as you know, they didn't look as if they were big enough, the whole gliders. However, there was an American captain and an American corporal, and they were quite good blokes. They said, OK, yeah, well, they're all in there, and he said, we'll show you. And he marked off the crates. One was the body, two were the wings, one was the nose, one was the tail. And they were Weco gliders. We'd never seen these before, of course. They were tubular metal with doped canvas skin on the outside. Very good glider, but entirely different to the Hawser or the Hotspur. And the, if I remember right, yes, I do, he said, anybody here drive? And I said, yes, I do. He says, well, now, see that over there? There was a huge tractor with a big electric winch on the rear. He said, we'd like to drive that. Well, I said, go and have a go. We were supposed to be able to drive anything. I said, I've got to have a go. Anyway, it was all right. I could drive it. I'd driven a Bren carrier. Pretty much the same basic idea. So he said, right, now, if you get that hook from the winch, put the crates, pull the crates up, try and get them in as near as you can to each other, the nose, the tail, the body, and the wings. In other words, line them up that way. He said, then you gang, we were put into gangs then, can help me. We drop the top of the crate. That comes off, and underneath it's on skids. We winch the skids together, and you'll see it all fit together like a Meccano set. And he was right, it did. It was brilliantly done. And he showed us how to assemble them. So we assembled them, then we flew them. And we lived in the crates. They were our billets. The crates that the gliders were in, we put those on the side and they became our billets. A good idea.
How did you like flying the Weco?
Very good. It was all right. It didn't have flaps like the others. It had lift spoilers. So it had a very shallow angle of glide as against the steep angle of glide of the Hawser. But once you got used to it, it was quite good. It didn't have any brakes either. You pushed the nose down to act as a brake. The nose was strengthened on the skid, and that acted as a brake. The skids really act as a very good brake. Whereas the Hawser had brakes, this didn't have any.
So now you were really preparing for your operation?
Now we were preparing for the operation. This was May. We did... That's right, we did very... That's when we first started to fly them in May. May the 25th. And we did... Well, I did 6 trips in May. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 trips in June. In Hawser, in the gliders. Before we did the actual operation. We did what was called a trip, which was, we had to take the... We were doing all these in Algeria, and even to a bit of night flying, which was always very dicey, until the 14th of June, when we flew over the edge of the Atlas Mountains to Tunis. We had to take the gliders, and we flew them to Tunis. We were towed by the American Dakota pilots, 67 troop carrier wing they were, to the airstrips in Tunisia, near Tunis. Most of them are not far from Tunis. I can't remember all the actual names. There were about 6 strips, which the Americans had laid out, because by that time, the Germans had been kicked out of Cape Bon. We did have one scare one night. We had the Americans had open-air cinemas. We were all at this cinema one night, and we were... 110 came over. I know there was a mad scramble by the Americans, but no harm was done. That, of course, stopped the film going on. But no harm was done. Nothing happened. And we had also an agreement with the Americans there that we used to get whiskey, being senior NCOs. We had a whiskey allowance. Well, the Americans didn't get any alcohol at all. So we used to trade them a bottle of whiskey for a few boxes of PX rations, which were good, much better than ours. But we'd have a good load of American PX rations for a bottle of whiskey, which was, we thought, a good, fair exchange. Our rations weren't bad, but they weren't as lavish as the American ones. The American ones were really good. They included ice cream and that sort of thing, which the British Army didn't even think about that. So from that point of view, it was all right. And that exercise, which we, when we flew all these gliders over the mountains, we had to go to, I think, 5,000-6,000 feet with these wackos, in very hot weather, of course. Middle of summer, and going over the desert, it's pretty hot. The thermals were quite active. But only one glider crashed on that trip out of 150, which is, I think, a very fair comment on our assembling them, don't you?
Indeed.
We landed Tearsville, that's right, Sousse. That's the name of it, Tearsville, Sousse. Sousse and Tunis, yeah. We took off on the 9th. We were then briefed, by the way, by Field Marshal Alexander, General Alexander, he was then. We were told about this operation, which was going to be to Sicily, and we had to take the bridge, Syracuse, the Ponte Grande, and the Americans would tow us in, and we'd release at 2,000 feet, and we saw maps of the area, and they said, don't worry about those lines, they're just shallow ditches. In fact, they were 4-foot thick walls. However, these things do happen in war. Now, the actual operation itself was a disaster, as you well know. 148 gliders, I think, were on it. I think so. The facts are somewhere. And of that number, I think 9 got on the land. About 14 were lost in various places, never made it, because it was a four-hour tow.
Can you take me through your personal memories of the operation in detail, please?
Yes, we took off in the dark, and taking off in the desert was a very precarious operation because you kicked up a load of dust before you took off, a hell of a lot of dust and small stones. So the first maybe 50 feet you couldn't see anything, it was blind takeoff. And at night we were supposed to fly on their sidelights, which they would put on for us. So to pick those out of the darkness was impossible, so we just guessed until the first maybe 200 yards of takeoff, and then we were up. We were okay. However, there were no accidents in there, because we'd done it before, so there were no accidents. And once we got in the air, the communication was a telephone line down the rope. But unfortunately, after a couple of hours on tow, there was the lines always pulled out, so we had no communication. None at all with the tug. And my tug, I can remember that now, his sidelights went off, so we were flying on the flashes from the exhaust. That's how we could see him in the dark, the exhaust flashes from the... So we could still keep our position in the high tow position. It was all right. It was supposed to have been a moonlight night. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Well, not for a few hours. And we were, Dickie, myself, my other pilot, Dickie Hansen, we were concentrating on watching these flashes rather than anything else. So we really couldn't see much around. And we certainly couldn't see the other gliders which were in the stream. About, I don't know, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, we could see in the very far, far distance some flashes. And we thought, ah, that must be the target. And then, we'd then been flying about 3.5 hours. I could see in the far distance, I could even see what I thought was a fire. And it was a glider on fire, I've learnt since. But this was maybe 4 or 5 miles away from 3,000 feet. You could see a long way. And the next thing we knew, we felt some jerk, and we were left with the tow rope. The idea was we were to tow to the land, down the land, and then we would release. You all with the glider pilot always release the tow, not the tug aircraft. However, there we were, over the sea, about 2,000 feet, and we got the tow rope. So Dickie said, I think his words were, bloody hell, we're going to have to ditch this, because we couldn't see any land. As we got lower, of course, the land disappeared. I said, I think we are too. And we've no idea where we are. We had no Mae Wests or anything, by the way. And I had a Jeep and four blokes in the back. One was a Sergeant Major of the Staffordshire Regiment. And as we got nearer, about 100 feet up, I said, God, we're going to have to ditch it, Dickie. So we slowed down and stretched the glide as much as we could. In other words, until we were all on the point of stalling and then pancaked down onto the water, which we did. No problem. A good landing. But it was a rough sea. There were about 3-foot waves, I suppose. And the next thing is, of course, the waves were coming over. We had warned the blokes behind we're going to ditch. So as soon as we were down, we heard them bash through, and we were in the cockpit. And we had to climb out and get through quickly, because it would, obviously, being tubular metal, were quite heavy. And the canvas having been pierced to let the troops out, it would fill rapidly, which it did. However, we got out through the door, out of the back of the cockpit, through the door, which they got out of. And we climbed onto the wings. They floated. But the sea was really rough. It was swinging around like nobody's business. And we couldn't see a damn thing. It was pitch black. And we hadn't the slightest idea where we were. All we did know was I had a direction of where I could see the fire coming from the flak and that fire. And we sat on this wing rather forlorn, I must admit. And then we heard some aircraft flying overhead.